Hello.
And welcome back to This Is Not
a History
Lecture.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Wait, what is it that says in... No, in Annie. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
I went in a very different direction.
I know you did. I was quoting a children's classic.
I was not.
But that's okay. We're having very polar opposite days today, it seems.
I am not having a good day, which sucks because it's October 1st, and objectively, I should be having a great day.
Spoopy season can officially start tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
Yeah, we'll just push it off a day.
Okay, I was like, what do you mean? It's the first right now.
we'll push it off. Hey, it doesn't start till midnight. That makes it spooky. So if you're as long as... Get out of my bag. As long as spoopy mood commences by midnight, you're technically in the mood.
I mean, maybe I'm just like really in the mood. I'm just being like really like a loser, bad mood today.
April, if you can achieve the April Ludgate vibes in October, I feel like you've accomplished the correct goal.
I had to work today and my boss was there and I was like, I'm so sorry. I can do my job. I'm going to be okay. Kitty is...
What was that? He, like, sat on it and then, like, rolled his butt sideways over my mic.
Hey. Come here. My old man dog. Anyway, my boss was like, are you good? And I was like, I'm here. And I'm doing my job.
I exist.
And that's about all I can do right now. Speaking of, I accidentally brought our radio home.
Oh, no.
And it, like, I live so close to the museum that it, like, it's still connected to,
oh, no.
I guess, to the Wi-Fi or whatever.
So I heard from someone that they're actually, like, sell. Like, that you'll hear them anywhere as long as you have them on you.
Yeah. Okay, well, that makes sense because I've lived further away and I could hear it then, too, if I accidentally brought it home. But I would just do that during, like, lunch. It's the first time I've ever brought it home.
Either way, nightmare.
Yeah. It's gone off twice. And I'm like,
I'm not there. Nightmare.
Well, it's just, you don't remember that you have your work radio at home.
Yeah.
So it's like, what's happening? Oh.
Yeah. No, understandable.
What is that man talking in my house? It's like, oh.
The voices followed me home.
I know. And I'm not working tomorrow. You know, tomorrow's Monday. So it's like a full work day. So all day tomorrow, I'm going to be like.
Mm-hmm. Hide under a pillow or something.
What I should do is just turn it down. Off. Yeah. You can just turn it down. Yeah. But what's the fun in that? So
you gotta know the tea going on.
I've gotta know if security, what do you need to unlock?
Security get called on the front desk?
Oh, you got a lost and found item?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah.
Exhibits? Did the train track need fixing?
Is there probably another PB&J thrown onto the tracks that derailed the train?
Man. Anyway, so yeah. Okay. So it's episode 139. 139.
Yes. That means next week is our theme, and we do have a good one coming for you next week. Today, I will be discussing El Dorado.
Like the movie?
Sure, yeah. Or what the movie is based off of, the city of gold, or the person of gold, as we will discuss. Yes. And what are you discussing?
I looked up the pronunciation guide earlier and I told myself do it one more time before we record and I forgot. I think it's a Greek lady.
Mm.
I think it's Aspasia is what I Aspasia.
Nice.
Aspasia is what I've heard most, but Aspasia.
Okay.
Cuz the Greeks, they like to emphasize syllables. So
they do the syllables.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, lots of that. So, Aspasia, who is a Greek woman.
Very nice.
From ancient Greece.
I love it. Well, sounds like we got some cool stuff going on today.
Yeah.
And you can hear way more about it if you stick around, because...
This is not a history lecture. With Kat and Kaylee.
Oh, boy. Okay. So...
Yeah. I think it's been
I've worked 7 days this week.
Nice. Make that bank.
I did have 5 hours of overtime, so I'll take it.
Is that time and a half?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. It's not, I mean, it'll help. Any little bit helps. And I told my boss, and I even, and that's with me intentionally taking half days at least twice to avoid that from happening. Mm. And it still happened.
Yeah.
So that's just, it's just a lot. It's just a lot is going on. And it's fine. Like,
y'all have a big event coming up.
Yeah. Well, and then we have a lot of small events going along the way. And then we had, I've been doing, there's these trainings that we provide, and they are 3 to 4 hours long, very intense trainings. And we cap them at 12 for a reason. But because of the big event we have coming up,
oh, no.
We had 20 people at the training yesterday. Ooh. And so I think, like, all of that work and then, like, everything just caught up with me today. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like,
yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, sorry I'm not.
Hey, we all have them days. Everybody knows what I'm talking about. Everybody gets that way.
Yeah.
You quoting Hannah Montana at me is worse.
Sorry, didn't mean it worse in this situation.
That's worse.
Fair, oh, fair. Man.
But how are you doing, Kat? Oh,
good. I had a organized chaotic week. There's lots of, like, all that stuff that you put off until you have, like, a long weekend or something like that. It really, yeah. I've been putting that off for years, apparently, because, like, I had everything from, like, doctor's appointments, multiple doctor's appointments, multiple other things. And I, like, even babysitting is always, like, it is what it is. But somehow it's just felt more chaotic this week. Like, I had to explain to children what acne was. Nice. And that was, like, I was like, how do I, these same children also asked, the background story of Medusa, and I was like, well, what have your parents told you about that?
I was like, I don't know if I don't know if I'm licensed to.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know what I'm allowed to say on this. And I was like, well, someone got in a fight, and Medusa became a, and I tried my best to give a good, and I, when their parents came home, I was like, just so y'all know, they are asking questions about, like, Greek mythology, and they're totally, like, we know these people, we've known one of them was our professor, and it's totally chill with, like, the concept of Greek mythology and other religions and all that stuff, but it was that moment of, like, I don't know how you talk to your children yet about...
Well, it's also, like, at what point, like, sexual assault...
Right.
Like,
well, and also, like,
it's not really your
myths,
call.
Yeah, and different tellings of the Medusa myth don't acknowledge things in the same way. And some are seduction, some are assault. And I was like, well, Medusa, and someone got mad at Medusa, and I tried my best. And then I'm also wearing a heart monitor right now. And at one point, one of the kids, they're just curious. They're young and they're curious kids. Yeah. And one of them just grabbed my shirt and, like, yanked to look down my shirt at the heart monitor. Thank God I was wearing, like, a sports
that
bra underneath.
Sounds about right. Yeah.
But they were like, what's that? What's that? And I was like, we can't touch it. It's talking to the computer. And they're like, no, what's that? And one of them literally was like, you're wearing a bra, right? And, like, pulled my shirt off.
That sounds about right.
Oh, this is children. And it's one of those things where I was like, yeah, this is about right. This is the chaos my week has been. And then, of course, you get the whole, pull us around, carry us around. And by the time you're done, you're frazzled, your hair is undone, and you're dragging two children around who are holding your ankles to their beds. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just one of those weeks that really accurately defines my entire week. And I start my new job tomorrow, which is my real highlight. I'm very excited. So excited. I'm feeling a little out of my element just because imposter syndrome never really goes away, I guess, until you're the president, I guess. I don't know what level imposter syndrome ends.
For you, I think, not that you're not capable, but you are skipping a lot of levels kind of in this position.
I am.
So I think that anyone who's kind of in your place right now would be feeling a little bit like of that.
Okay, that makes me feel better.
You know what I mean?
Great.
Yeah. Not that I don't think that you can handle it, but just I think it's a very natural thing to feel like,
great.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, I'm doing this now. Okay.
In the words of... a TV show. Actually, it's not Struck. We can say it. Game of Thrones. Sorry. I've been rewatching Game of Thrones. And however much I hate Lord Baelish, their motto,
sucks.
The whole chaos is a ladder thing, it's very true. Like, chaos is a ladder. You either, like, climb through it or you like fall.
Like, nice.
Oh. And I'm like, I don't want to adapt to Lord Baelish's mentality going into this new job, but dang, I
maybe
gotta make
don't.
This chaos a ladder.
Maybe don't.
I gotta crawl
adopt
through this.
Anything from Lord Baelish ever.
I gotta crawl through it.
Oh man.
But yeah, I was like, this is chaos. And I get what he meant though. Like, you either fail or you climb out. So
So we'll have to hear all about that next week too. So I'm sure you'll have lots to share.
I will.
Yeah.
I will.
So it'll be good.
Anything
be good.
Else that went good in your week, maybe? Or has it all just kind of been a countless days of work and
no, I mean, like, I had a decent week. I just, like, today, specifically, I'm like...
Valid.
You know?
I do, yeah.
So, it's okay. It's been a lot of, like, drama at work.
Oh.
Which I'll have to talk to you about later.
Yeah, I will.
So, you know.
Well... Then we can just plow through this and
let's
then,
get her done.
Okay.
Let's get her done.
Great. In that case, I'm going to jump straight in on El Dorado. Not the road to El Dorado, but El Dorado.
Dang.
I know. Although we could just watch the movie. Do we want to just live react to the movie?
That sounds like a better thing.
I think. No. We'll get copyrighted. So the term El Dorado originally refers, as far as we can tell, as best we can tell, to the legendary kings who used to rule in what is now an area of Colombia. And over time, it became a term used to address the mythical city that spanned the region, becoming kind of a stuff of legend over time as conquistadors moved through the area and sought out the three Gs.
Ugh, guns, gold, and glory.
That's what y'all use?
There's two 3Gs.
Oh, we use the gold, god, and glory.
Okay.
In our high
school. Yeah, it's like, it's just kind of what,
Yeah. I've heard it different ways, but it always makes me laugh.
I've
it's such a
either,
universal thing.
Yeah.
But it is different depending on
I
where.
I know. Well, I've heard both, because it's usually if, like, it's guns, gold, or glory, or guns, god, and glory. Any combination of those four words can be the 3Gs.
Yeah.
Which, like, just make them 4Gs at that point.
At that point, just...
But then you can't,
because
the 5G towers are sending radio signals to our brains.
I don't need a conspiracy theory right now. I can't handle that. Well, I learned it is gold, god, and glory, but there are different iterations among the American public education system. So, I'm going to duck back to the earlier kind of origins of the term. Of the definition. Because of how it evolved over time and everything, it's debated if this term has, like I said, it was used to describe a person for a while, or a station, I should say, a status. There is an account where it was an actual person, and then others use it as a location, as a name for a place. Our ability to trace it back goes to the legendary land of Muisic. Sorry, now I'm having trouble pronouncing. There we go.
Wow.
I went through every possible iteration before I landed on the right one.
Oh, man. That was awesome.
It's because I always got yelled at for not enunciating well, which funny that I do a podcast now.
I think enunciated too well, because you did say pronunciate.
Pronounce.
And that's too many enunciations for that word.
The emphasis was on the wrong syllable. Anyway, so yes, the legendary land of Muisca, M-U-I-S-C-A, Muisca, aka Chibcha.
Okay.
Whose people live now in what is Colombia in the northern Andes. This span of time is somewhere between the year 600 to 1600. So a pretty long, solid existence for a civilization. Probably would have gone on longer if, you know, colonization wasn't a thing. But isn't that the story of the world?
Yeah.
So gold in this context is very different. It's not currency. In this culture, it's not standardized but it is used as a raw material for trade, just like you would a food or okay. pottery or something like that. Yeah. So it can be exchanged for other goods, but it's not like 1 pound of silver is worth this much of everything else. Like how we have a concept of money in our time, but also how metals are being used across the ocean in European areas.
Yeah.
The gold itself does have a significant cultural and religious influence. But gold, if you know or have ever worked with it or seen it, it's actually a pretty soft metal.
Yeah. You know how I know that?
I don't know how you know that.
If you play Minecraft, you know what I'm going to say. Because, like, so in Minecraft, you have, like, weapons and armor, right? And you can make them with any, with a lot of different materials in the game.
Okay.
And gold, even though it's rare to find, sucks as armor or weapons because gold is a weak metal.
Oh, really?
So
okay.
they built it into Minecraft like that.
Well, I've always found it interesting, the history of wedding rings and stuff, because gold itself is not that strong. And diamonds aren't actually, like, at their raw, like, they're not that valuable. What is valuable is their upmarketing and use in jewelry and stuff. So it's one of those things, like, gold, depending on your culture, availability, and how it's viewed, is not actually a good, like, it's not good for currency or trading or enduring use. Like
the only value inherently in it is the value that we've placed in it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Like, there are other metals that are better for weapons and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that's that definitely comes into play here in this culture, because a lot of their gold is used for embellishments. I mean, it's in tools and stuff, but it's used more often as a decoration, as a religious embellishment isn't the right word, but you kind of get what I'm saying. Like, it's not a necessary,
it's like an ornament.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that means that, unlike Europe, where gold, because of its scarcity and its kind of status, is only available to the upper class, gold is a pretty standardized commodity. It's available to most people in this culture. It's pretty common. And therefore, while the people don't, they understand its significance and hold it to have religious significance, it's not inherently like if they were to offer it to God or religion. It's not like they're investing every cent they have to do it. It's more of a symbolic gesture.
Yeah.
So the word itself, El Dorado, means golden one or gilded man.
Okay.
And it refers to a practice in which the monarch of this indigenous group would ascend the throne. The process was kind of lengthy. This monarch, before they could receive their crown, or not crown necessarily, but their placement in society, would be sent to a cave, and they would be denied what they considered to be kind of the necessary pleasures of life, which would be salt and pepper and physical companionship from women, usually, was denied, until the day of their coronation. Now, when this coronation comes around... this future king would travel to Lake Guadavida, which is a lake that we know where it is. It's still marked. It is a lake naturally occurring in what used to be a volcanic crater. It's now inactive.
Ooh, those are cool lakes.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's interesting to me that, like, the concept of El Dorado is lost, but we know, like, where this
We know a lot of, the other details about it.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's a cool, it's, like, circular because of that. It's a very, like, almost symmetrical lake.
And
this is where this up-and-coming, soon-to-be king would be expected to make their offerings in a religious context for the benefit of his reign and prosperity. And he wasn't alone in this journey. Citizens would go with him and stand on the shoreline and kind of watch this procession with him. He would basically get onto this floating boat or kind of a barge or a raft, along with usually 4 or so other attendees would be the people on the shore, but attendants, and they would be decked out in gold. It would be more like they were wearing finery, jewelry, ornaments, like you said before. But the up-and-coming king himself would be covered in a sort of resin or sap, and then dusted gold would be put all over him. He became a gilded man, a golden man.
How long has he been 17?
A while.
Is this gonna the killer, Bella?
I hate the fact that I knew what you were talking about. I still never read that.
You don't need to have read them or even watched the movie. Scene. You just I know it from existing in
it's
society.
A cultural moment. Yeah.
Oh, trust me. I read all the books, but I literally have not seen any of the other movies other than the first one. And I genuinely do not enjoy watching Twilight or reading Twilight at all. Are Twilight jokes hilarious?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I don't even need to know anything about it to know that scene and its importance in our culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. So he... He did have the skin of a killer.
Oh my God.
That Edward was supposed to sparkle like diamonds, though. This is gold.
Yeah, but come on.
This is so much better.
Look, I see a Twilight joke. I'm going to make a Twilight joke.
No, and I appreciate that. I'm glad you did. I would not have gotten there in my own brain, so I'm glad you did. So with his usually four or so attendants on the raft with him, he would row himself out into the middle of the lake, covered in this gold dust. And... the people on the shoreline and the attendants, they would throw the ornaments and the gold on the raft. And even those on the shore might throw in some of their own, like, personal offerings, something smaller, of course, than, you know, what the monarchy essentially could afford. I shouldn't say monarchy either, because that's implies a hereditary, Eurocentric kind of... Well, the next ruler had more... access to wealth and all that. So the stuff on the raft is obviously more valuable, but citizens on the shoreline could, you know, toss something in the water as well during this ceremony. They would push all the gold in, sing a song, chant, something of the sort, and then the king has his turn. He would jump into the lake, and when the gold was washed off and he emerged clean and you know, ready to ascend his throne, essentially. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that was the tradition of the new ruler of Muisca.
That's baller. We should do that to presidents.
I don't want to see any of the presidents naked. I really don't. I'm sorry, but I don't.
I mean, essentially, I think Donald Trump, like, does this just on his own. Have you seen the inside of his apartment?
Have you seen the inside of Trump? Well, it might not be Trump Tower much longer.
Oh, they took the sign down.
Well, legally, he has to, like, disband his whole corporation.
At least in New York, yeah. I don't know about the other states, yeah. Because there's other Trump Towers. There's the one in Vegas and there's one in Chicago.
Oh, that's right. We'll see. I have no clue what's actually going to stick on that or not.
I know. That seemed kind of, like, out of the blue.
But I was
I was like, dang, that's crazy. And then everyone's like, Spirit Halloween, I'm looking at you.
I would love to see Spirit of Halloween take over Trump Tower.
Oh my God.
That'd be amazing. So yes, part of this legend or this ritual or a mention at least of El Dorado, whether it be a man or a place, exists in pretty much every major conquistador's primary sources. Whether that's a journal that the conquistador kept, or it was someone alongside them that was, you know, marking their travels and all that, a mention of El Dorado almost always comes up because it was so culturally significant and so almost not romanticized, but what's the word when it becomes exaggerated? It becomes not overinflated. You
like
know what
larger
I mean.
Larger than life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
embellished is a pretty good word for it. But there's a word I'm thinking of, and
yeah,
I
know what you mean. When it, like,
over-exaggerated.
Aggrandized.
Yeah. It's something like that.
It's in that realm.
That word's going to come to us at, like, 3 a.m. But the story we have most closely linked to...
Mythologized?
It's not quite the word. I know.
Yeah.
This is why thesauruses exist. Thesauri?
That's right.
That's right. Oh, we're really in it tonight, guys. So the only thing we have close to a primary documentation of this actual event, like the actual process of the future ruler covering himself in gold dust and then jumping into a lake, comes from Juan Rodriguez Frail, a little after 1600, who wrote it down as he heard it supposedly from the nephew of the last ruler of Guatavita, who would have experienced the ritual himself. So that's pretty much the closest we can get to a person having claimed either to have seen the ceremony or known about the ceremony. We do have another primary source or two that include like artwork, in which there is one depicting two people covering a third person, a third being at least, in some sort of gold or dust, or embellishing them. But this practice fits culturally with what we know about the group themselves, because they were known to make sort of sacrifices and offerings to the appeasement of their gods, whether that meant burying gold in holy places as a sort of gift or doing it in a ceremonial thing with the community. Either way, it was done in the hope for prosperity, to save them from disaster or natural issues and ill will from the gods in general. So it fit the idea of such an elaborate, decadent tradition could very much fit. It's not not like these conquistadors were hearing this and thinking, oh no, there's no founding for this myth, this legend. Like, it was believable to them.
Yeah.
Which, cool. To be fair, conquistadors also were desperate to believe in gold, that they were actually going to find something, which may have encouraged them to inflate the story, to give it more credence than it actually would. But the practice of the ceremony of the El Dorado, or the Gilded Man, became so synonymous with just the gold and wealth and ostentatious wealth that was used in this ritual, the name starts to get kind of adapted for the city or the culture itself. Possibly an entire region that falls under the rule of these gilded kings, gilded men. And this is kind of where we get the idea of the city of El Dorado, of this massive, unattainable, larger than life, grandiose, unfathomable wealth.
Right, because like, if they're doing stuff like dousing themselves in gold dust, there's no way they're not like living in it and like sleeping on piles of it.
Exactly. Which is interesting from a religious standpoint, because like, I find it very interesting how certain religions are like, we will literally give the best that we have in sacrifice to our gods, versus other religions who are like, no, we will give like a portion of what we have, but like the concept to them, like the Europeans seeing them, the idea of sacrificing gold to them is unfathomable, because they're like, it's so valuable, why would you waste that? And they see it as a waste, not as this is the first thing that should go to the gods,
right?
Because that's how devout you are. It's just really interesting how religion and like capitalism, but like wealth and greed play into religion and our concepts of them. I just find that so fascinating, and it pops up in such intricate ways throughout history. So this is what really starts to mix up the accounts of whether or not El Dorado is a place or a person or hell, even a body of water. If it's just a lake where people were jumping in, there is an account from the middle of the 1500s, mostly in the writings of conquistador Gonzalez Fernandez de Oviedo, that claims El Dorado was one man specifically, not a handed down position or ruler. His claim is kind of, it's this monarch who preferred to every day, or as often as possible, dress in gold. He was so ornate and ostentatious. So wealthy that he could just dress in gold every day, but that it was a singular person.
What are you going to do? Not dress in gold if you can dress in gold?
I mean, it's not my color, but okay.
You're more of a silver.
I actually have no clue, but I feel like I would not look good in gold every day. I would just get really sunburned, all that light reflecting off of it, my pale white skin. No one's going to be looking harder for this legendary, whether it be a man, whether it just be the gold itself, whether it be a whole city of gold, no one's going to be looking harder than the freaking conquistadors.
True.
Because they love that. So conquistadors and treasure hunters alike scour the area. And it is interesting to look at different interpretations of conquistadors versus treasure hunters, I kind of went on a rabbit hole when I was doing my research for this, because a lot of historians will differentiate that there's a notable difference in conquistadors versus the people who were genuinely just looking for treasure. Kind of like how all conquistadors were treasure hunters, but not all treasure hunters were conquistadors. And it was a really interesting...
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't want a blanket statement that inherently treasure hunters want to take cultural wealth,
yeah,
for themselves, which makes them conquerors and colonizers, right, by definition.
Right.
So it's there's not every historian is saying that, but it is interesting to look at how those two things are interpreted differently in different accounts and different historians. So something to keep in mind when you're reading about this stuff, especially in this time period. But no one ever really finds this legendary city of gold as they're looking. It is important, too, to note that if a city of gold had been found, or depending on what type of gold they were looking for, it would not have been preserved in its cultural shape, if that makes any sense. The conquistadors basically wanted to find gold and melt it down, put it on a ship, and take it down back to Europe. Like, they would not have been like, oh, a beautiful, ornate example of a funerary object. Like, they would have just melted it. Yeah.
Oh, cool, gold? Sure.
Mine. Yeah, they wouldn't have, like, put any value on what it was or preserved it in any way. That's not what they gave a crap about. Some were more ambitious searchers for this golden city, though, and some were more clever in their attempts to find it. However horrible it is, there are accounts of conquistadors destroying several cultural landmarks in pursuit of it.
Mm-hmm.
The ritual practice of El Dorado, of having a ruler submerge themselves and emerge gold-free, was said to have ended about half a century before the Spanish ever even arrived.
Dang.
Yeah, no, they missed it.
Sucks to suck.
But even in the later years, there's discussion about whether this was a practice done out of tradition or if it was genuinely a religious experience, et cetera, et cetera. What had the perception of this tradition been over time? But by the time that conquistadors get there, we have people like Gonzalez Pizarro, who is a conquistador that accumulated a force of hundreds of enslaved native people and other conquistadors and livestock and animals, and he forces them to go on a devastating journey, of course, trying to find the city of gold, torturing locals for information as they traveled. Nonetheless, they never find the city of gold, or evidence of the stories of it or anything like that, until they reach what is, I think it's now Ecuador. A local chief tells them, like, hey, you're looking for the city of gold? Yeah, no, it's right down river. Like, go. Yes, go. Be free. It's right down there. And it is very likely that this particular chief was like, I know what happens to the locals that they ask questions to, and they don't give them answers. They torture them for more information. I will just give them what they want. So it's very likely that he just told them there was a land of great wealth and prosperity. Well, I'm not saying that there weren't lands of great wealth and prosperity, but on par with what they were looking for with the city of gold, downstream, just to get them the hell out of there, away from these people. Pizarro follows these instructions and builds some boats, and they're floating there, multiple hundreds of people down the river over more than a month. They're just floating the river, and they find no riches, not a lot of resources. Their livestock is dwindling, their food, it's a shortage. And part of their party breaks off to supposedly go find some food and materials. But the party that broke off never returns. They claim that they had no choice but to continue on further down the broken off party claims that they had no choice. Had to go down the river. Couldn't handle... They just couldn't make it back for whatever reasons. And that break off group actually documents and chronicles their journey along what we now know to be the Amazon River. But Pizarro obviously didn't like that and eventually was like, hey, that was treason. You kind of left us to die, but also, is it treason to colonize and murder and torture like native people?
Not if you're doing it for the Spanish king.
For the 3 G's, man.
Oh my God.
Gold, gold, and glory. Gold, gold, and glory.
Yeah. Those ones, yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I mean, eventually, Pizarro does make it home, but who gives a
Yeah, that guy sucks.
He almost died on the way. Like, they almost all starved. Which, for the enslaved people that he'd brought with him, I'm really sorry about that, guys. Pizarro, I don't care if you died. But there are more groups like this that are attacking locals and trying to worm this information out of people who are genuinely like, we don't know what the hell you're talking about. But of course, conquistadors don't believe anything unless it's gold, God, or glory. So there are more and more conquistadors who just keep showing up asking for this stuff, including German conquerors who are parts of mixed demographic groups. But I do want to mention that this is not all like Spanish conquistadors. There are a lot of people searching for El Dorado that exploited the natives, robbed them, and tortured them. I just want to make note of that, that when we talk about conquistadors, the word conquistadors is Spanish. So like, that's what the visual tendency is,
right.
But it's not just Spaniards.
Yeah.
There are others though that got a little, I hate to say smarter because they were assholes about it, but were smarter in how they looked for El Dorado. Antonio de Sepulveda was a conquistador in the 1580s who decided that he was going to try to drain the whole ass lake of Guadavida, because the city of gold had to be sitting beneath it. He was like, well, that's where they threw all the gold, and that's where he emerges as a king, so, like, that's gotta be it. So he basically carves a huge hole in the crater, side of the crater of the volcano, and tries to drain the water out.
They just did shit back then.
They really did. There was no UNESCO. There was nothing.
They're like, hey.
Precious cultural landmarks? Screw that.
You know what we're gonna do? Drain an entire lake. And not even care.
Destroy an entire ecosystem and culture.
Just do it.
To see if I can find a city of gold.
Oh my god.
People were assholes. They still are. But his engineering, thankfully, was not up to par. So he cuts the hole in the side of the volcano crater. And then there's a huge landslide. And the whole thing closes back up again. And it's just... That's how... You don't mess with nature, dude.
Yeah.
You don't. The volcano spent thousands, millions of years forming itself, and you tried to cut into it.
Yeah, maybe don't, like, bore into a volcano.
Yeah.
I know it's, like, a while before anything dangerous would happen, but I don't know. Maybe just don't.
Maybe don't.
Maybe don't.
Yeah. Like... I feel like that's a great idea. Obviously, the locals were not happy that he had tried to, you know, destroy a both religiously significant lake and... you know, a source of their whole ecology,
so
you know?
That's completely valid.
And so before our buddy Antonio de Sepulveda could try and dig his little hole in the volcano again, they drive him out of town. So I do love that that people got pissed off enough or had the capabilities to chase him off. I just really like that. But Antonio was not, unfortunately, the only one who assumed it was beneath that lake. The English try again in the early 1900s. I think it's 1909-ish, which is... I'm trying to think about this. We all know about the whole push for colonization and the sense of entitlement that certain cultural groups have... about other people's cultural artifacts. This is about 10 years before... King Tut's tomb is broken into and looted. And I will always use the term looted when I can, because that's absolutely what happened to King Tut's tomb. None of that should still be in the British Museum. Right. I'm just going to stop there before I get my little soapbox. But this is about that same time. This is the early 1900s. And so that tells you where we are with the Eurocentric efforts to dig up, colonize, and then take everything back to their homeland. Whether it's financially valuable or what they deem to be culturally valuable. But this time, they were like, wow, it didn't work so well when he tried to carve a hole in the side of the mountain, so we're just going to dig a tunnel under the volcano and drain it that way.
Again, look, I know it would take a lot to reach lava. But
I feel like it's a bad idea.
First of all, there's no way that they knew that in 1580.
Oh, no, this one's in 1900.
Oh.
We're at 1900 now. This is the same decade, like a decade or two before King Tut.
Okay.
I mean, it's technically an inactive volcano, technically, but like, still, I feel like digging into a volcano is just a bad idea.
You're asking for it.
I know.
Like, bare minimum, I want as many layers of rock between me and lava.
The boiling magma as much as possible.
That, mm-hmm. Like, that can happen. You know.
Yes.
I'm not going to remove layers of rock.
You know, you would be the smart one. I don't think they would have liked you, Kaylee. So
I'm thinking with my woman brain.
Girl math. So I can't tell if this went worse or better this time around when they tried to dig a little drain through the volcano.
That's insane to me. Why would you do that?
Well, it was sort of successful. Like, they did. They got the water out of the volcano, the crater. But then you know what happened? What was left at the bottom was just mud.
What?
And mud crazy. That can't hold their weight.
You know why it's just mud? Because they didn't follow the clues in National Treasure.
I get to that later, don't worry. I definitely mentioned National Treasure.
You think you go through this whole episode without not mentioning National I know. Treasure?
It's a weekly occurrence.
That is your Roman Empire.
It's my Roman Empire. Oh, it is. Their problem with the mud at the bottom not holding their weight is it's like a silty, weird composition to the soil that they weren't predicting. It turns to stone.
Nice.
It, like, hardens into basically yeah. concrete.
It's like, oh, I wonder if it's, like,
kind of like quicksand, how when it dries out.
Well, in all the stuff that happened with Burning Man this year, because it rained on that, like, silt. It's called playa or something like
I see,
that.
I was not paying attention to what no. happened at Burning Man.
So it's, like... It's like a silty, it's not sand, it's in the desert, but it's not.
It's like a soil that hardens. Yeah.
And
yeah.
So like, it's completely fine when there's no water. The problem happened is that it rained.
Oh.
And so you could not, like, vehicles could not drive on it because they'd be stuck. And there are stuck vehicles that there's no way to get them out now.
Oh.
Yeah. Unless it rains again and someone brings in like a bunch of tow trucks, but then you can't do that because the tow trucks don't have anything to drive
yeah.
on. Yeah. So
oh, dang.
That's why Burning Man, all that drama happened there because it rained.
I was not paying attention to Burning yeah. Man.
And so those cars are just going to sit there. Yeah.
I love it with the whole ecological crisis that we're in with just abandoning things in
yeah.
desert places.
Which, like, there's nothing that lives in that desert, so if you're going to abandon them anywhere, probably that.
Yeah.
But it's crazy to me to
it's
be
also
like...
bad for the environment just in general.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, like, Burning Man... You know, this Burning Man.
Well, I don't know if the conquistadors had Burning Man in mind. They probably would have been totally down for that,
Burning
honestly.
Man, when they bored a little too close to that lava.
The problem is they did occasionally burn men. Because the conquistadors
that.
Were assholes.
I'm not talking about that.
I don't actually know where the term Burning Man comes from. Like the,
because they burn a man. They have like this big, like at the,
like an
the festival. Yeah, like they, like a big man that they burn.
This. Okay, well.
It's a for a bunch of, like, people who were hippies in the 70s and now have a lot of money.
Oh.
That's, and then, like, people who
think
I
thought it was, like, Coachella.
No.
Oh.
Burning Man is, like, a much different vibe.
Well.
It's, like, for, it's a very unique culture, and it's not, like, and it's not even, you can't even really call it, like, a music festival. Like, there are music acts that perform, but it's not, like, what you think of when you think of, like, ACL.
Festival.
Yeah. It's an...
I'm going to Google it later.
It is a fascinating enigma of a...
I'll search it on TikTok, and I'm sure I will get all the drama. So, yes, this mud on the bottom that they get to, it can't really support their weight, and then when it finally dries out completely, it just turns to stone. And they're like, well, shoot. And so they're like, okay, we got to go back to probably, I guess, England and find some, like, drilling equipment. And so they go back home, go get the drilling equipment. And they come back and they find out that all that, like, sludgy, soily silt, it had, like, I guess, rained in the meantime and flooded back and had filled up the drain that they'd...
Nice.
That they dug and re-solidified into stone and basically just plugged the hole in. I mean, I'm assuming that some of the soil in there was probably, like, the same stuff that's in, like, lahars and volcanic ash and stuff that
yeah.
would probably solidify into rock pretty easy. So I feel like that was... Yeah. So they returned to drill through things and realized that the entire hole, the drain they had dug before was
it's
full,
just not gonna work they
and
just,
it had refilled with water and they were out of money and resources and they're like, well, shit. So they never went through with that one either.
You know why it didn't work? Because they didn't have Big John. Big Bad John.
John Henry. Yes.
He would have gotten through John that Henry volcano. Done it. He would have done it.
I bet he would have.
One day. No sweat. Mm-hmm. No sweat.
No, he would have made it.
He probably shouldn't have, no. But he could do it.
No.
We're glad that he didn't, but he could.
John Henry. I need to make sure I'm remembering this tale correctly.
I think, I mean, it's not a happy one.
No, it is not. He dies at the end, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Because even in a song, I think he dies.
I think so, too. So, yes. The Conquistadors...
He's an American folk hero. I don't know if he was actually based off of anything.
Oh, I've just always known him as, like, a legend. I didn't think he was a real person.
And it says folklore on the Wikipedia page, okay. So...
Yeah. So, the result of all of these attempts, all of these efforts with the Conquistadors and the explorers and treasure hunters... is that they never found what they perceived to be El Dorado. No one ever declared, I have found it. I found the city. Those attempts yielded some smaller materials like golden baubles and pieces. Usually when they tried to drain the volcano that couple times and they found little bits left in the bed of what was the lake. But some beads, pottery, stone, those smaller golden pieces were very likely what people threw in the water as kind of a offering from mm-hmm. not the ruler when the ruler threw in his stuff, but the people on the shoreline kind of their smaller stuff. No one ever found the perceived, you know, millions of gold and treasure that was supposedly waiting for explorers and treasure hunters. But if you were to ask, you know, a historian or someone who studies this, if El Dorado has ever been found, then technically, yes. El Dorado, the Gilded Man, the concept of golden, the golden ruler, it's been found. We know where it was. We know that this practice started in Lake Guadavida. And so, in a way, we have found El Dorado. We understand, or at least we think we understand, the origins of the practice and legend. But as far as a lost city of gold that looks like man's wildest dream, no, we have not officially found that, Nick Cage. But
lame.
I know. And it probably...
You mean I can't believe everything I see in the movies?
No, you can't.
Damn.
Well, it's
that
very...
was my whole plan.
I know, I know. It's very likely that... well, we could go over conquistadors and their mind-bending apologetics for... hours about, you know, what did they tell themselves to validate what they were doing to get people to sponsor their tours of the Americas. Like other myths at the time have just become so convoluted that the concept of El Dorado, it's among many like John Henry, like folklore mm-hmm. pieces that we don't even know, like what's based on something real and what's just mm-hmm. completely story.
Yeah.
I mean, we have things at the same time, like Ponce de Leon and the Fountain of Youth happening.
Right.
These things that, as far as our science and history tells, could never actually exist. And El Dorado doesn't even refer to a place. As far as we know, the language just means a man. But culturally, that's not to say that it's exclusive to this culture. There is a city of gold in many different tellings and lores and cultural groups. El Dorado is just probably the most publicized media version of it between, you know, the Road to El Dorado movie by... Mm-hmm. That's a DreamWorks.
Yeah.
And, you know, just references in movies. But other legends of golden cities include things like Cibola, Quivira, the City of Caesars, and more, not all of which are limited to South America areas. But this expansion of the tales of the City of Gold to things like Northern America and other places spur even more conquistador and colonization movement up away from what could have been a localized legend originally.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll admit it. Cibola, like the City of Gold that is mentioned in National Treasure 2. it was kind of like my Titanic, my Greek mythology, my ancient Egypt. Like, I was a little obsessed with the idea, like, understanding the concept of Cibola when I was growing up. But this one specifically really, the idea of seven cities of gold pushed a ton of conquistadors into North America that wouldn't have necessarily ventured that far anyways or followed those trails that they did and searched in the areas they did, if not for this. So at the end of the day, it's interesting that these legends really have driven a great deal of colonization and how culture has formed in the Americas.
Yeah.
In the story of Cibola, there were survivors of a failed expedition. I believe that the legend tells it as they were enslaved and dragged along on an expedition. But through their travels and learning to become healers for the expedition and then eventually either escaping or being the only survivors of the expedition, they had heard stories of the lost city of gold of Cibola. And later may have even, you know, told conquistadors, hey, it's here. But they could mm-hmm. never find it again. Mm-hmm. Or even if they had seen it, could never find it. Or even just heard about it. So it's a very ambiguous story. The story of Cibola originates from the Coronado expedition, I believe, which is... No. Hold on. I didn't write it down in my notes because I was so obsessed with it as a kid that I was relying on my memory, and now it's coming to bite me in the butt. It's been a little while.
I mean, that sounds right from what I've seen in the movie.
They told Coronado about the city of gold. The enslaved people that mm-hmm. survived the first expedition told Coronado, and then he led the biggest expedition. That's what it was.
Okay.
So the Coronado expedition was the biggest to go looking for Cibola. But the legacy of that was never to find Cibola. It was just to kill countless native people and bankrupt Coronado and introducing conquest to a whole new area. So culturally, the term El Dorado has just been adapted to mean almost any place of prosperity or any golden, beautiful land.
Yeah.
I mean, even my hometown, one of the major streets running through Frisco is El Dorado.
Hmm.
Like, it's been used in counties and towns and cities and streets. It's a universal term now, and everyone knows what it means because throughout so many cultures and stuff, there have been cities of gold that we've looked for. So that is the overarching wide history of the origin and influence of El Dorado, the city, technically the Gilded Man.
Dang. Well, that was really cool. I really enjoyed that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I actually really, that one I got to redefine a lot of my misconceptions.
Yeah, that's like a fun one to do notes for, too. That's like when you're like, ooh.
I know, I was like, yeah. And I do want to thank, again, World Encyclopedia had a great article about it.
Our faves.
I just trust World Encyclopedia so much. World History Encyclopedia. I want to just give them a shout out whenever I use it. Because even though I used other sources as well, this was just the most comprehensive, well-written. I just really appreciate y'all. I want y'all to know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. Well, good job. Bravo.
Thank you. Well, do we have any recommendations to jump into before we go ahead to yours?
So there's one thing I really want to recommend. But with the writers, with the actors still being striking, and the writers like basically getting everything they wanted in a deal.
I know.
And I don't know what I can and can't talk about, but this is an animated show. So, but it has voice actors.
And those are included in...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm conflicted.
Maybe wait a couple more weeks.
Yeah.
If the WGA has just, like, settled, then maybe
SAG we'll
after will as well.
Yeah, we'll see if the actors go. But
just to be
so safe. I have an alternative one. There is a new Percy Jackson book out.
Oh.
Yeah.
Is there really?
Yeah.
That was fast. The last one came out just, like, last year or something, didn't it?
No. This is like Percy Jackson. Oh, not like
not
in...
the spin-offs? Oh.
No, this is Percy Manabeth. This is Percy Jackson.
What?
Percy Jackson.
I know. How did I not know this was coming?
Yeah. Oh, I've known it was coming for a while. And Uncle Rick just announced that he's going to do a trilogy after this with Percy too.
Oh my God. And they just dropped the trailer like a couple weeks ago.
For the show. So
they've really given us what we need here.
I know. My friend got a copy today and I was like, oh my God, I need to get it. And I was like, but I feel like I need to reread.
Yeah.
Because I listened.
How many books total is it now?
I don't know about the whole thing, but I kind of feel like I need to do the whole thing.
I do too.
Because the what I've done most recently, I enjoyed Percy Jackson, but I was never really into it. Like I really liked it, but I wasn't like super, super into it like some people are, which is valid. I really get it. I see the appeal. Trust me.
Oh, yes.
So I actually never read the sequel series to Percy Jackson until I was in grad school, and I listened to the entire original series and then the sequel series. So that's actually all I've read in kind of the universe.
Okay. It's been a long time. It's probably been like a decade since I've read.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I need to reread from the beginning too.
Yeah. So, so that's very fun and cool. So that's going to be my recommendation. Whether you are going to read this newest one or whether you haven't read Percy Jackson at all, I am going to recommend Percy Jackson and the Olympians because, oh my God, what an icon. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's always a good solid recommendation. And I do need to revisit some of the stuff I read when I was younger. I really do.
They're so fun. And because it is written, you know, it's like middle grade YA, you know, it's very easy, very fast, like quick reads, you know, that aren't like,
I'm not like pushing my way through.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not like dense tomes.
Yeah.
So that's
awesome.
That's my recommendation.
Yeah. That's going to make me all inspired. Okay. My recommendation is, I know that this band is a little bit hit or miss, and a lot of people just don't like them. And I understand some of their earlier stuff is not the best. I'm a big fan personally of AJR. Nice. And they have a new single out right now called Yes, I'm a Mess.
Nice.
And there's a few songs from AJR, like, Sober Up, Weak. Like, there's just some really, I feel like there's some songs that they really go hard in. Like, the lyrics are just really impactful to certain people. And this one's like more of a fun one, but Yes, I'm a Mess is out. And I have been listening to it a lot because it's comforting to just have a song about being a mess that's like unapologetic. So I'd recommend maybe going to listen to that one if you nice. Like kind of like upbeat, fun.
Nice. I like it.
Non-standard. Like, it's not normal instrumental stuff that they do in their music, but I'm check them out. Check out that song maybe.
Cool.
I really enjoyed that one. Yeah.
I like that.
Oh. Yeah. So I don't usually recommend a specific thing. I usually go for the concepts, but
I know. I was like, dang, Cass got a recommendation.
I've really been listening to, I've been listening to a lot of another band lately, but it's just not family friendly or appropriate.
Oh man.
Yeah.
So. Cool.
Well, nice. I'm ready for yours. I have no clue about this person.
So Aspasia has been on my list for a very, very long time. Because she is one of, if not the, like, it's debated, you know, she was a very, very, very significant woman in 5th century Athens, which is like height of Athenian society. Like, she hangs out with Socrates, allegedly.
Okay. Whoa.
Yeah. So she's got friends in high places. So she's kind of been around the block. Maybe I shouldn't say that, considering what I'm going to say later. She's a very well-known woman from classical Greece. And the problem with that is, so she was a rhetorician, as far as we know, but none of her texts survive. And so all we have is mention of her. So the earliest literary sources to mention her that are actually written during her lifetime. They're from, a lot of the mentions of her come from Athenian comedy plays, like theater. They like satirized her a lot for whatever reason.
She's probably because she's a woman. And
yeah.
Women don't get respect.
And doing things. But she also appears in Socratic dialogues.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Yeah. So after she kind of fades into obscurity, we hear about her like kind of in brief mentions here and there, but it wasn't until the 2nd century AD when Plutarch writes the life of his biography on Pericles that she kind of pops back up, and that's like the most complete ancient biographical piece that we have on her.
Okay.
Which means that most of our modern conceptions of her and most of like what people believe her life was does come from Plutarch, which that happens with a lot of people that Plutarch wrote about.
I was like, Plutarch's also just like one of the people that were like, the first historians. Yeah. Like we give him a lot of credit.
Yeah.
Should we? I don't know. I mean, we do.
You know, he was doing it when no one else was doing it. So,
which we appreciate. Yeah.
So you got to give him some credit. This does mean that as far as sources go, there are honestly very few details about her life that we can actually verify.
Okay.
But most we seem to have a general consensus enough to kind of agree, like, okay, this is probably what her life looked like. So, yeah, with all of that, that's just kind of with any ancient, specifically women, you kind of have to. Yeah, it's a lot of that. It's this is her life as we understand it, and historians have worked, especially in the modern era, to kind of examine our text and see, like, okay, are we just taking Plutarch at his word, or like what life did she actually live? But it's always going to be that element of unknown, and you just kind of have to go with it. So she was born in the Ionian. I think that's an I. It should be a capital I. Ionian Greek city of Miletus. I never know how to pronounce that. Miletus.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
Greek. We apologize, but we're not Greek.
Which is now in modern day Aydın province in Turkey. Fun fact. She was born, as best as we can guess, around 470 BCE. She does move to Athens at one point in her life. The reason, like, what motivated her to move to Athens is unknown. It's thought that maybe her grandfather had, like, connections with a famous, like, a relatively well-known Athenian family. So he of pulled them over there. But we don't really know why. And that part of the story was kind of, like, not important. So I was like, okay. So she was a metic, which M-E-T-I-C, which is essentially a person not born in Athens. And if you know anything about, like, the Athenian city-state, is they were really into Athens people versus not Athens people. So this does mean that she had to pay taxes, actually, to live in Athens and kind of participate in their society. It also means that she was not allowed to marry an Athenian officially.
I didn't know they were that serious about not allowing marriages.
Oh, Athens was very into Athens.
I knew they were very into. I didn't realize it was that.
Yeah. Well, it actually probably worked out in her favor, because Athens had very strict rules, pretty much in all of their parts of society, including how proper Athenian women should act.
Yeah, I know they're a lot more strict on their female.
And this definitely deserves its own episode. And I've had it on my list for a while. It's like ancient Athenian women versus Athenian courtesans. Doing an episode on that and
that
the comparison
would be
there would be a really
good one.
Because
the only comparison I've ever been given is Spartan women against Athenian women.
Yeah.
So, which is like the textbook, like,
right, yeah,
school. So yeah, right, you should definitely do
so it. So I'm glad I did Aspasia today, because I was reminded of, oh yeah, I should do that episode.
Yes, you definitely should.
So maybe soon here we'll see it. But because she was not Athenian born and wasn't like an actual citizen of Athens, this actually allowed her more freedom than like Athenian women were able to have.
That's valid. Like, you don't get the benefits of all the Athenian women, but you also don't have to adhere to all the rules.
And there were a lot of rules, let me tell you. This is where we get to kind of like the meat of like what is debated about her life, is what specifically she was doing in Athens. Most historians agree that she was running some sort of, how should I put this, house for women.
Like a salon or a...
Like a salon or a brothel.
Okay.
Is kind of the debate.
So female company in some capacity.
Yes. And she was in the employ of one of these places, and then she eventually starts her own. So the issue here is that the source of the idea that she ran a brothel specifically seems to come from those satirical plays that she was mentioned in during her lifetime.
Oh.
And so if it was truly like a salon, like a house of rhetoric, like you see in other, you know, in other parts of Athens at this time for men, but geared towards women, you could see how a satirical play
would be written about
would go that direction of So, oh, yeah. You know.
It would undermine a woman's ability to think by implying.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
And not that there's anything wrong with that. And if, honestly, if she did actually just legitimately run a brothel, go off, queen.
Yeah.
Slay. You know, that's my shit.
I know. Well, it just, and that's the thing. You don't have to, you don't sacrifice intelligence to work in a, in the sex work industry by any means, but it changes the cultural context in what she was allowed to do and how she did it and what she faced adversarially to do what she did.
Yeah. So I do want to talk about one historian that worked, I guess, in a, does a lot of work in the life of Aspasia. Her name is Madeline Henry, and I don't know anything else about this woman other than she seems to do a lot of work on the life of Aspasia. And she has this quote, which kind of rubbed me the wrong way, because I was like, well, I don't know if you should have that attitude about it. So she says, quote, "We are not required to believe that Aspasia was a whore." She uses the word whore because a comic poet says she was. And she goes on to say that the portrayal of Aspasia involved in the sex trade should be, quote, "looked upon with great suspicion." So I understand her point. Like,
yeah,
a satirical play is not a good source to take literally.
Right.
That is, like, true. However, there is not a point in history where it was appropriate to call a sex worker or prostitute or anything a whore like that.
No, yeah.
Like, not in an officially published work. Like,
yeah, and also, like, to do so as a historian kind of discredits you. How modern is this?
I know.
How modern?
Like I said, I didn't look at her anything other than that, but I just, you know, if you're looking, if you wanted to look into more of the life of Aspasia, you're going to come across this woman's name pretty quickly.
Okay.
As
a historian, that's just a little, like, historians, not for, someone the other day said something about wokeness and historians, and I was like, no, it's not for an attempt, a desire to be woke for the sake of being woke. It's a desire to make history more approachable and enforce the idea that historians, to an extent, are supposed to be empirical.
Okay, she's a professor. Hold on. This is newer, so I think she's still
especially
around.
In a newer context, it's hard to view someone's interpretation of history as empirical and trustworthy.
And published 1995.
Yeah.
In 1995, you should not have used the word whore to describe anything related with sex work other than, like, like the whores of your Twitter account, which is obviously, like, tongue in cheek. Yeah.
Interesting.
So I just wanted to mention that specifically because that was kind of a red flag for me. And like I said, if you are interested more in Aspasia, you're going to find this woman's name pretty quickly and just, you know, understand where your sources are coming from, all of that good stuff. Anyway, so I think it makes sense to me that Aspasia was most likely the leader of a salon, essentially, as we would now call it, a place of rhetoric. That housed people like Socrates and Plato and eventually Pericles. Because this is something that crops up again and again in Athenian society at the time. Socrates talks about all of the different houses of rhetoric and some that he likes and some that he doesn't like. And obviously this was a big thing that happens then. And it would make sense if she was so prominent to kind of like have, maybe she wasn't like training rhetoricians like some of these other places were, but she was kind of, it would be more of like a salon.
Yeah.
You know, she was hosting these conversations and she was engaging them with him herself. That makes the most sense to me. And it makes sense to me how again, a satirical play would take that and run with it and, you know, change it into she was running a brothel, which again, that's not even satire to me. That's just slay again. There is some, like, debate, too, on that argument, though, because they were like, well, if she was really running a salon, then these comic plays would not have been acceptable to make about a respectable woman. And so that's kind of, like, kicks it back into maybe she was a sex worker before she met up with Pericles. But it's kind of like, whatever she was doing, I hope she was having a good time. And she was. She was making a name for herself. Mm-hmm. And good for you. So, through this, she is able to get kind of like, one, by being like a non-native born Athenian someone, a woman living in Athens, and two, by whatever means she was able to do this, she did have a relatively independent life for herself as a woman in ancient Greece. And she, like I said, was making a name for herself. And then she meets Pericles. And for all we know, this is a perfectly fine relationship. We don't know a lot about it, actually, but she does enter into a very long love affair with Pericles.
Okay.
We think they met sometime between 452 and 441. Somewhere within that kind of 10-year time span. But and the exact nature of their relationship is disputed. Some people are like, oh, he just kind of went to her when he had certain needs, or, you know, maybe she was just his concubine and nothing more. And some people said that, you know, they had a deeper connection and he viewed her as kind of like his partner, and not just like, you know, his side piece. Eventually, they would have a son called Pericles the Younger, who they named Pericles the Younger, who was born around 440 or 439 BCE. When Pericles the Younger was born, Pericles actually had two legitimate sons, Perillus and Xanthippus. However, within 10 years of Pericles the Younger being born, his two elder sons had actually died.
Oh.
But Pericles the Younger technically was not a citizen of Athens because he was born to a non-Athenian woman. So this actually prompted Pericles to propose an amendment to his own citizenship law, which allowed him to become a citizen, his son to become a citizen and inherit,
it's never
which
a
actually
problem
happened.
Until
like
it's
we can,
your own family.
Right? Yeah. We can track that in the record. Like, that happened.
Interesting.
Yeah. And the thought is that, you know, maybe it wasn't just for him, because apparently, like, there was a war, and then there was, like,
a
disease that broke out, and so it killed off a lot of the men.
Yeah,
so
if everyone's like, dying, you need to encourage people to come to Athens, not be selective about who you're validating their inheritances.
Yeah. So, at one point, too, according to Plutarch, Aspasia was prosecuted for impiety, and was defended by Pericles himself and acquitted of it. So good for you.
Impiety. Interesting.
Yes. Yeah. So I don't know the details on that, because again, this is all
right
alleged and coming from Plutarch. So in 429 BCE, Pericles dies. Aspasia goes on pretty quickly to marry another politician named Lysicles and gives a birth to another son, Parestes. However, it's like debated on whether or not she ever had this son, whether or not he was named Parestes, or if she was ever even like connected to Lysicles at all.
Love that.
Yeah, they like just have no idea.
Truly
this is
mysterious
just a story
woman.
However, no matter what happened, Lysicles dies a year after Pericles dies in 428, and after that nothing is recorded of Aspasia's life, and we don't know. She just falls off the map completely. So we don't know what happened to her after that, when she died, where she died, if she died.
She's still around.
She's still around. I believe it. Wow. She didn't die. She just went back home. So I do want to talk a little bit about kind of like what her legacy is, because as with any ancient woman, it, you know, changes over time.
Mm-hmm. The historiography of ancient women is fascinating.
Yeah.
The way they're treated throughout history and media is so interesting.
Yeah. And even during her time, like within the rest of the classical period, when she was still relevant and when she was still remembered enough by kind of like the culture to be talked about, there were these two schools that developed around thinking about Aspasia. One was, again, from those old comedy satirical plays that emphasizes that she was like the seductress who seduced Pericles, and she, you know, was a sex worker and a brothel owner, and she was, you know, this like blah blah blah, all this stuff. And the other one is like, no, this was a proper good Athenian woman who had a very impressive philosophical and rhetorical skills and was very intelligent. The problem is that because we don't have any surviving work, there's no way to like know. I mean, like, we don't need to have her surviving work. We can just take people's word for it. Like, if Socrates writing about her in a positive way, she was probably a legit rhetorician.
Socrates,
you know,
didn't talk well
about,
many
things. Yeah. So to have her kind of approval, it's, you know, and even then, like, Plutarch is also kind of the first one who kind of, well, not the first one, but it kind of reinforces this idea that she had this, like, kind of power over men and was, like, influential and controlling.
Which is, it's so,
and blah,
interesting,
blah, blah,
to see that narrative of, like, she's evil because she tempted him and not, like, he's weak because he,
well, also,
say,
like,
no.
And also, like, maybe, you know, we're talking about rhetoricians. Maybe she was just a lady who was good at talking and men believed her. And that was, like, they're like, oh my god, she's using her womanly wiles.
Like, I've never met an intelligent woman. Every single man was sapiosexual. They just didn't know it. And they were super attracted to intelligence. Yeah. And they're like, wow, I've never heard a woman speak before. I've never stopped talking long enough to hear a woman speak before. Yeah. What do I do?
Even in Menexenus, Plato, like, portrays her as Socrates' teacher in rhetoric, so obviously, like, she's pretty legit.
Whoa.
Yeah, to be teaching, to be, like, portrayed as teaching Socrates is a pretty high,
that's a pretty high honor.
That's pretty high honor. So throughout,
although
kind
I don't
of,
know if I would want someone being like, hey, Socrates is your student, right? I'd be like, oh yeah, I'm talking about him.
See, you don't like Socrates.
I don't not like Socrates. I just acknowledge that that man was not the most fun at parties.
Oh my god, he was the worst. Which, like, would I want to know him personally? No. Would I think it's hilarious if I could, like, watch him interact with people? Oh my god, that would be a great time. Oh my god.
Oh yes.
Yeah, there's, like, it's like certain people where it's like, I don't want to interact with you, but I do want to put you in a room with like certain other people and just see what happens.
Yes.
And he's one of those.
Yeah.
And there's even, like, so Pericles is a very famous Athenian politician. He's been around the block, and he is very famous for a lot of his speeches. I forget the really famous one, something like funeral something, something. And it's, like, rumored that she actually wrote those speeches for him. This has never been confirmed or verified or anything, and there's no way for us to really know if that's, there's any truth in that or not.
Is this during you mentioned a war, is this during the Peloponnesian War?
I think so. I forget who Pericles is, honestly.
No, you just said war, and I you're good. I was just curious because the wars get really messed up in my head this far back in history.
Yeah, let's see. Oh yeah, Pericles' funeral oration.
Okay, that's the really
that's
one that's
his
used, like,
really really famous one.
Okay,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and it is the Peloponnesian.
Like, wait, this has to be Peloponnesian.
It is the Peloponnesian War. Yes.
Okay. Actually, really proud of myself for that because I don't pay attention to any of the ancients.
Dude, the Peloponnesian War. Every time I've been taught about it, I'm like, huh?
You know, and then, like, 24 hours later, I'm like, so what's the Peloponnesian War again?
I it does not stick in my brain.
I don't,
like,
know if anyone actually knows.
If you know what the Peloponnesian War, you're lying. You're lying. You're lying to me right now. No one knows what the Peloponnesian War is. And that's, like, the most famous of the Greek wars. Like, all the other little ones that they just drop, I'm like, what are you talking about?
I know. I'm just confused. Always.
I know. So, again, her, like, having any hand in the authoring of these speeches has never been confirmed, but the fact that there is a rumor, and if she was truly a very talented rhetorician, I would not be surprised if he at least, like, bounced ideas off of her.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to have a very long and seemingly good relationship, so there was that.
I do like that.
Throughout the years, you know, she kind of fell into obscurity, and then she gets picked back up, and by the 1800s, she's relevant enough to be in dictionaries and encyclopedias and mentioned in that way. But we still have this, you know, we're kind of taking Plutarch in the old comics for at face value, so she becomes this kind of, like, seductress figure.
Mm-hmm.
And as with a lot of women in history, it's only in the modern times when, I mean, like, modern as in the last 50 years, not like the modern era, but only in the last couple decades that we are like, wait a minute, let's look at this critically.
Let's actually question something.
Maybe we don't take satirical plays about someone at their word.
Maybe that's just giving the men what they want.
Yeah. So anyway, that is Aspasia. I really wish that we had more on her because she sounds fascinating, but such is what happens when you are a woman in history, unfortunately.
Yeah, that is an unfortunate recurring topic that we issue that we face.
I know.
So to remedy that, you know what you got to do, ladies?
I don't know.
Do something freaking awesome.
And right.
Written about in history books.
Right. Write a lot of things down all the time.
Yes.
Yes.
That too.
Yeah.
That too.
Yeah.
Keep a lot of journals.
Yeah. And like, I don't know, nothing ever gets deleted off an internet, off the internet. So even if it's just like a blog post that no one knows about,
yeah,
it's going to be there forever. Mm-hmm. Someone will dig that up.
Someone will.
So,
but also with that same vein of thought, be very careful what you post on the internet. Yeah. Because it does not go away.
To be clear, this is only what you want preserved, not. Yes. So.
Yeah.
Oh man, cool. Well,
that's cool. I'm glad you did that. I didn't know her name even, and I'm really sad that I didn't, and now I'm happy that I do.
Yeah. That's why we do this.
That's why we do. Wow. Okay. So we learned about two ancient things today. Well, not ancient. That's, mine was 600 to 1600.
One old and one really old.
Yeah. There you go. See, anything before 1900 for me, it's like, ah, the ancient histories. Which is not correct, but yeah. Well, awesome. I'm glad you did that. I'm glad that we had a decent episode. Thank you for sticking through it. I know this was a rough day for you.
It's okay. It is what it is.
Yeah. We have those days.
You gotta do what you gotta do.
Yeah. Well, we'll be coming at you next week with more history. In the meantime, if you want to tweet at us, you can always tweet at TINAHL podcast because I refuse to call it X.
Yeah, no. As far as I've seen, no one is calling it X.
Which I appreciate. Like, our society might be falling apart, but we all mutually agree that Elon Musk was an idiot.
No, that's stupid. We're not doing that.
Yeah.
Or you can email us at thisisnotahistorylecture@gmail.com. If you have just a lot to say to us, we appreciate it.
Yeah. And if you want to leave a review, it's always super helpful. You can do that anywhere that we pretty much have our streaming going on. We have a really cool topic coming up for you next week. It's themed, so it's nice and spooky.
Yes, it is Halloween themed.
We're going to kind of cross the divide on the type of podcast we're doing almost.
Yeah, but we are not going in a respectful way.
In a historic context.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
We're not doing it just to do it. Trust me.
So we're excited for that, and we're excited for you to hear us again next week.
Yeah.
And so, in the meantime, just remember that this has not been
a history
lecture.
Bye. Bye.